Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. This is the Ion College Basketball Podcast. I got Matt Norlander with me. I got Sam Bassini with me. It is Sunday, and it's another wild weekend of college basketball. The big story, I think, is that Kansas, maybe you've heard, secured at least a share of its 12th straight Big 12 championship. That was the result of victory over Texas Tech inside Allen Fieldhouse on Saturday afternoon. And so, Norlander, I'll start with you. So I tweeted this yesterday, wrote about it just a bit, and tried to put it in context. And while I think everybody acknowledges it's amazing, there was still pushback, like people trying to qualify it and people trying to discount it a bit by banging on lack of national championships and Final Fours or being dismissive of the Big 12 as a league. And it's just something I sort of noticed in general. Basically, anytime I tweeted anything this weekend or anytime somebody says something is great, there seems to be a chorus of folks who try to say it's not. Like I noticed it Saturday night with Golden State Warriors. We're getting a little bit of that now, right? Oscar Robinson saying, I don't know how good they are. And this other person talking about, well, I don't know if they're really all-time great or how good Steph would be in a different era. Well, is that just sort of the world we live in now where people are constantly trying to be dismissive of greatness? It reminds me a little bit of what Yeezus tweeted a few weeks ago. Just shut the F up and enjoy the greatness, right? Shut the F up and enjoy the greatness. It seems like we, as sports fans, have a hard time just enjoying greatness because what the Golden State Warriors are doing is great. What Steph's doing is great. And to swing it back to college basketball, 12 straight Big 12 titles is unbelievably great. And yet, for some reason, some people reject it on its surface. Do you understand why, or am I overstating it?
I mean, the people that have an issue with Bill Self and want to bring that up, I mean, these are the kind of people that are the worst at parties if they even get invited to parties. Because honestly, like, to have that kind of take is just, it's brutal. Especially, you laid it out in terms of all-time Hall of Fame coaches active, and previous ones, Calhoun, Krzyzewski, Boeheim, what these guys have been able to do in terms of stringing together consecutive years of regular season championships, and no one even comes close. I don't have the tweet in front of me. Does even one of them have six?
No.
K has five?
Of the current Hall of Famers, the guys who are active and already in the Naismith Hall of Fame, Calipari has five. Krzyzewski has five. This means, by the way, for people who didn't see the tweet, most consecutive league titles. Like in all the years that Mike's been at Duke, he's never won more than five in a row. Now, five in a row is amazing, right?
Yes, that's the point. It's incredible.
This is 12 in a row. It's 12 in a row. And now I will say Bob Huggins won seven in a row. I think they were Conference USA or Great Midwest or whatever. But when he was insane, he won seven in a row. Mark Few has won a bunch in a row.
It's like 13 of 14 or something.
Right, yeah. He won 11.
In a power five, like the record's UCLA with 13 straight. And that was actually done by three different coaches. I don't know if people assume it was all done by Wooden, but it was not. It was done by three different dudes. Wooden, of course, started it, but then it carried on after his retirement. But like Kansas got a shot next year to tie UCLA's, and this is a much more competitive and balanced era of college basketball. Like, I just don't even get it. Like, I thought when I put it in context and I said, hey, this is the best Cal's ever done, this is the best Patino's ever done, this is the best Boeheim's ever done, this is the best Krzyzewski's ever done, this is the best Roy's ever done. Now, look at Bill Self. I thought people would go, whoa. And there was a lot of that, whoa. But there was also some, says all you need to know about the Big 12. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, how about this? So, of course, I get obsessed with this topic, and I start diving at it from every angle. Okay, so in the 12 years that Bill's won the Big 12, without exception, if you want to be dismissive of the Big 12 and say, well, that says more about the Big 12 than it says about, you know, Kansas, couldn't possibly do that in the ACC. Okay, first off, that's stupid. We'll get back to that in a moment. But think about this. In these 12 years, three guys have made the NCAA tournament every year without exception. Only three in college basketball. Mark Few, Tom Izzo, and Mike Krzyzewski. That's it.
Yeah.
So my point being, it is much easier to make the NCAA tournament from any league than it is to win the Big 12. And yet he's won the Big 12 12 straight times. And almost no, like, there's only three other dudes in the entire country who have made the NCAA tournament in each of those years. So, like, what are we even talking about? Like, it's just, like, it's crazy to me. And then people say, oh, well, like, the Big 12 sucks. The Big 12 stinks. The Big 12 in seven of these 12 years has been top two in KenPom. In eight of the 12, it's been top three, and it's been number one in each of the past two seasons. What are we talking about?
And this year is the most impressive because no first round picks in the starting lineup so far as we can surmise at this point. And even if, you know, something ridiculous were to happen, and that did happen, this is clearly his least talented starting five he's ever had. And the Big 12 has never been better than it's been this year. So for him to set this, you know, this latest mark, this latest record with the team that he's done, kind of puts an emphasis on it. And oh, by the way, Kansas is now firmly entrenched as the number one overall seed. Sure. It's probably going to be that on Selection Sunday.
No question. Sam, like, can you make sense of this? Like, why are people trying to discount this? Why can't people just take Jesus' advice, just shut the F up and enjoy the greatness?
You're talking about people on the internet who don't enjoy anything. Like, of all people to ask about this, you're the one who tells me, no, don't get in fights with people on the internet. It's not worth it. Like, what are you doing? You're not taking your advice right now.
Well, I've only gotten to a fight one time on the internet this weekend, I believe. Maybe two, but not one. I just get so irritated. I don't mind questions, and I don't even mind disagreements. I just mind dumb questions. The dumb ones drive me crazy. Like, I don't mind disagreements, but I can't deal with, or I struggle to deal with, just nonsensical comments. Like, when people, like, can I tell you another one I've had? Okay, just let me. Just say yes, even if you don't want to hear it. So
yes. Okay. Gary,
so every day, when I rank these stupid basketball teams, you get the same comments over and over again. And listen, I don't mind disagreements. Fine. Like, listen, rankings are subjective by nature. It's like you can argue in a variety of ways. We don't even all agree on how we ought to be ranking the team. Some people think it should be a snapshot of now. Some people think it should be entire body of work. So, like, whatever. But I constantly get people who just focus on one very limited aspect of something and try to, like, I got this one. Indiana beat Purdue. How could you still have Purdue ranked ahead of Indiana? Well, there's an intelligent way to argue in favor of Indiana over Purdue, but simply because Indiana lost at Purdue earlier this week ain't it. Stop it with that one. The other one, this dude named Seth on Twitter, right? It's not Seth Davis, by the way. It's a different Seth.
Shout out to Seth Davis. GP going after your boy right now?
No. It wasn't Seth Davis.
I know. I'm just playing foil to
Seth,
you right now.
Seth Davis is
You're
my
so
boy.
Rattled.
I'm rattled. So, okay. So he tweets me, and he's frustrated and offended by where I have Miami ranked, okay? So, and this is his rationale. But because I have Miami behind, I don't know, 11 other teams. I got Miami 12th. He says, Miami has a better record than some of the teams in front of them. A better ACC record than some of the teams in front of them, first place in the ACC, and they have an RPI of 7. How could you have them 12? Again, there's an intelligent way to argue for Miami. Like, they've won 7 of their past 8 games. The only loss in that stretch was at North Carolina. They got wins over Virginia, Utah, Duke, Louisville, Notre Dame. They only have one home loss all season. Their worst loss of the season was a fluky loss to Northeastern that was literally more than 3 months ago, right? But, like, you can't simply cite a record. That doesn't mean anything. Like, Miami has a better record. Miami should be ranked. And I know I'm not talking to you guys here. I'm just anybody who's thinking about tweeting at me, just understand this. Miami has a better record than another team. Therefore, Miami should be ranked ahead of that team. Like, Valpo's got a better record than Miami. So does St. Joe's. So does Arkansas Little Rock. Do we think that Miami should be ranked behind them simply because of the record? Like, what are we taught? Stop it. Stop being dumb on the internet. I guess that's my point. Hashtag stop being dumb on the internet.
You might have gotten in more fights on the internet this weekend than I did.
Oh, God. I've been, like, it's just, like, there's a lot of good ways to argue for Miami. But, like, the ways people try to argue for Miami are like, rooted in nonsense. And beyond that, I would say this. Though I like Miami, and, you know, I have them ranked 12th in the country. Of course I like them. They are the only team in the top 25 right now that has 3 losses outside of the top 100 of the RPI. So that's the other thing that drives me crazy. Every time a fan's arguing on behalf of his team, they say, we beat this team, and this team. Well, the losses count too. Can we talk about the losses?
Yeah.
Like, why do you know? Am I the only person in the world that looks at the loss column anywhere? Miami, as great as Miami's been this year, they have 3 sub-100 losses. Literally, nobody else in the top 25 has 3 sub-100 losses. All right, I'm through.
Let's talk about Indiana.
Call the end of the podcast.
Yeah, let's
done with the podcast.
Well, I'm at least through with that. Let's hit on.
Well, hold on, real quick. Let's hit on Indiana.
It's been a good weekend for me, Norlander. You want to know why? Because all the things that I beat the drum for, like, they basically came out favorably this weekend. Bill Self won another Big 12 title. You know how that makes me feel. Tom Crean won a share of the Big 10 title. You know how that makes me feel. That's two Big 10 titles for Tom Crean in the past 4 years. In the previous 15 years, pre-Crean, in the pre-Crean era, 15 years? Yeah. In 15 years pre-Crean, Indiana won only one Big 10 title. He's won two of the past four.
Well, guess what? Here's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping, see, Indiana closes its schedule out a week from when we're recording this podcast on Sunday, March 6th. There is a possibility that we could get a repeat performance. And Maryland could win that game. But Indiana could be the Big Ten champs.
Oh,
and
no.
It could cut those nets down after a loss
for a
second time.
Do you think they would do it again?
I hope they do it again.
I hope they do it again.
That's basically the best possible outcome. Because
for people who don't remember, Norlander, tell the story.
Indiana lost a game, was the Big Ten champs, and Tom Crean brought out a ladder and said, "How you like me now? I'm cutting down these nets." That's basically what happened, and it was incredible.
No, that's not basically what happened. That is exactly what happened.
So, and listen, it would be incredible if it happened again. Maryland is a team in definite need of some good wins here, because that is a team that is just slipping away. I mean, listen, still a good record, generally speaking, lost three of its past four. And Iowa, which also lost. See, Maryland's, you know, getting tripped up in Iowa, doing what Iowa has done a lot under McCaffrey, and that's just fading in February. Can't have too much confidence overall in the Hawkeyes right now. Ohio State has played itself into the at-large conversation, which is incredible. But because of those two things, Indiana, as we kind of hit on, I think it was the last podcast. If not, it was a week ago, where now it's going to have these expectations on it. And, you know, Crean doesn't get to the second weekend, I think there's just going to be – he's still going to be there, but I just think you know, we could have a meltdown situation with Indiana fans. So that'll be fun to track as well.
I mean, we're always a loss away from a meltdown situation. And if he were to lose in the round of 32, he would just go bananas, right? I mean, and I get it, I guess. But I've always said this, and I know I'm in the minority here. And Sam, actually tell me, am I being wrong here? Because I listen to this. I tend to judge coaches based off of how they – run a program and handle a team over a four-month season, as opposed to how they perform in a single elimination three-week tournament. And so I don't get caught. So, like, when people want to, you know, point out Boeheim's lack of consistent NCAA tournament success, or even that Sean Miller hasn't been to a Final Four yet, or, you know, I guess Bill Self gets a little bit of this too. I just always sort of go, I don't know, man. That was a good season. Like, that team had a really good season, and then they, you know, and then they got caught. Like, last year, I thought Iowa State had a really good season, and then they, you know, and then they lost a game that they shouldn't have lost in a single elimination tournament. But so I don't get bothered so much, like, when Indiana wins the Big Ten but then loses in the round of 32. But God, everybody else, it's almost like, this is the, I don't know if this is the one sport. Maybe this isn't unique to college basketball at all. But this is a sport where you are better off being mediocre for 4 months and being great at the very end than you are being great for 4 months and then having one bad game in a single elimination tournament. And that's always struck me as odd, especially in as it relates to how you judge whether a man is doing a good job as a basketball coach or not.
Yeah, I think that's the right take there. I mean, Crean's made two Sweet 16s in the last 4 years before this one. He's now won two of the last four Big Ten titles. I just don't really see a reason to be upset with what he's done at Indiana thus far, beyond, you know, outsized expectations for a program that probably shouldn't have them anymore, given that, you know...
The people do not want to hear that, but yeah.
I know they don't want to hear it. It's the same thing with UCLA people out here. There's a petition right now to fire Steve Alford after he went to two straight Sweet 16s. Like, that's a guy that is in the opposite scenario where I think that fans will basically just find whatever fits their narrative best, right? So Steve Alford has had two, or has had at least last year, an underwhelming regular season and then a great run that you would think would kind of like stem the tide a little bit. But no, it has not stemmed the tide at all. And for some reason, people want to see Steve Alford fired whenever he has not only a like top five recruiting class coming in, but he's made two of the last three Sweet 16s. It's crazy. And it's the same boat with Tom Crean. It's just kind of the opposite side of the ledger. Crean, over the last 2 years, hasn't necessarily had the most success, hasn't made a great run in the NCAA tournament, but he has had the postseason success. Has had the regular season success. So people are going to find whatever best fits what they want to say at this point. And it's all a matter of, you know, personal, whatever you want to, you know, judge someone on. I think it's a pretty unfair thing to judge both of these guys, actually, given what their records have been at their universities.
It does strike me that maybe we've just reached a point, and perhaps we're all like, I don't know, prisoners of social media. Like we used to not hear all the, you know, all of these opinions. Like once upon a time, Sam, you're too young to remember this, but like there was really only a handful of places you could hear people, you know, express public opinions about coaches or players or anything, right? It would be like the local columnist in the newspaper and to the extent that there were national columnists and maybe like on AM talk radio, but like you had no way to know really what some dude you went to high school with thinks of the current situation at your alma mater. Like there was no way for people to express those opinions loudly and publicly. And now there's message boards and FM, AM and AM radio stations and Twitter and Facebook. And so maybe we just hear, maybe it's always been there, but we just, now we've reached a point with technology where we hear it all the time. I don't know, but it does seem like people are just never satisfied. I wonder, like, it seems to me being a reasonable fan would start with looking at something objectively and going, you know what? It's not great, but it's pretty good. You know, this is pretty okay. Like, what's, you know, I would like more, I guess, but I understand, like, this guy is doing a perfectly reasonable job. And yet you look around the country and, like, unless you're in the top 10, and sometimes even then, like, people are always questioning, like, everything. Like, nothing's good enough. Like, at UCLA, undeniably, like, nothing's good enough. At Indiana, I guess it's good enough right at this minute, but let Tom DeLuz at Iowa on Tuesday, and we'll be right back to, oh, but he backdoored into a Big Ten title, so that doesn't really count. I mean, people just be trying to discount that one. It's just sort of a weird existence.
Yeah, with UCLA, it's, oh, but they don't play basketball pretty enough now. Oh, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar comes out and says, like, they don't teach the fundamentals enough anymore. Under John Wooden, we were great with the fundamentals and we did everything. And I'm just like, yeah, you had the best college basketball coach of all time. That's an impossible standard.
And like, you stayed in school 4 years or 3 years, or, you know, whatever.
If that's the standard you're holding a basketball coach to, you are setting him up for failure every single time that that you hire a basketball coach. And it's a totally unfair standard, not only to hold the coach to, but it's an unfair standard to hold Dan Guerrero and that athletic department to. And I'm sure it's the same thing at Indiana, where, you know, Indiana lives off of what Bob Knight did there. Again, one of like the three best basketball coaches ever.
Right.
And it's just an unfair standard that people kind of need to readjust what these programs are capable of realistically.
You know what? I've sort of gotten tired of old people talking about, like,
oh, it's the worst.
Like,
it's
the worst. Like Oscar, Kareem. First off, Norlander, correct me if I'm wrong. It defies logic to think that basketball players today aren't better than basketball players 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. First off, they're all bigger, stronger, faster, quicker. They're more skilled. They take better care of their bodies. They train differently and better than they ever have. The game's bigger. Once upon a time, you just had to play against other white dudes. Then it was white dudes and black dudes, but all Americans. And now it's the entire world. Like, doesn't it defy logic completely to think that, like, I'd love to see some NBA point guard from the 1970s try to guard Russell Westbrook. Like, it's just, like, I don't understand like how people can even say that, you know, you hear it all the time now. Well, you know, Steph in a different era wouldn't have, but you know what Steph in a different era would have been? The baddest dude on a basketball court. That's what he would have been. Why is it so hard for older people to accept? And I'm older myself, but I can at least understand that. Am I missing something? Am I wrong? Would Russell Westbrook like be non-existent if he played in 1974?
If Russell Westbrook played in the NBA in 1974, he'd be the best player on the court. I mean, it's not even really that much of a debate considering how much of a freak. Like, he's really one of the five or six greatest athletes ever in NBA history. When you really look at Russell Westbrook, what he's able to do, he's got one of the best first steps ever. He's just insane. But why don't you just come out and say that Jeff Goodman's an idiot, and he started talking about this stuff in our group text message, and you just want to call him out for it, because all of a sudden he's starting talking about how the 86 Celtics would wreck the Warriors.
How about that? Well, first off, in the group text, I had been drinking. So I woke up this morning, I was like, oh, wow, we were getting into it a little bit.
Shout out to Calvin Natt, right?
Okay, so here's my point. So, yeah, we had a group text going last night. It was me, Norlander, Goodman, some other clowns, and we were all just like, I mean, we're recording this on Sunday night. So, like, Saturday night was the Golden State-Oklahoma City game, which was just amazing, right? I mean, just an unbelievable basketball game, like as good as it gets. And Steph was amazing, and the Warriors were amazing, and whatever. And so I guess it was Goodman at some point said, yeah, but, you know, these Warriors couldn't play with the Celtics from the 80s, different eras, and that era was better. And I'm like, what are you even talking about? Like, I honestly think these Warriors would kick the hell out of the Celtics from the 80s. If only because I think the teams today are probably better just because they're, for the most part, you know, just more skilled and whatever. I don't even have – but here's the point. I guess we can reasonably disagree on whether these Warriors would beat those Celtics. But one of the points he tried to make to back this was Isaiah Thomas – was a all-star this year. The current Isaiah Thomas of the Boston Celtics. He said Isaiah Thomas was an all-star in the year 2016. Do you think somebody like Isaiah Thomas could have been an all-star back in the 80s? Get out of here. And so I immediately just Googled randomly 1985 All-Star Game. Because I knew there'd be somebody on there who like you wouldn't. So I found a dude named Calvin Natt. You ever heard of Calvin Natt?
Calvin, no idea who Calvin Natt is.
Never heard of
him. The crazy thing was, I literally did not know. GP, we Googled the same All-Star game at the same time because you sent the text message right with Calvin Natt, and then I just sent it like 6 seconds after you. Shout out to Norm Nixon.
Right.
And Michael Ray Richardson, I think, was another one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the idea that, all you need to know about how down professional basketball is today is that Isaiah Thomas was an All-Star. Dude, Calvin Natt was an All-Star in the mid-80s. Don't talk to me about Isaiah Thomas. And you know what? Blindly, I bet Isaiah Thomas would mess up Calvin Natt. I bet you put Isaiah Thomas on the court with Calvin Natt and let him and clear out for him. I bet you Calvin Natt would have his hands full. But my point is, it wasn't just Magic and Larry and Charles and the other Isaiah Thomas who were the All-Stars in the 80s. There was also Calvin Natt. Just like right now, there's also Isaiah Thomas. So like,
if I gave you 300 guesses, I don't think you could guess where Calvin Natt went to college.
No, I knew earlier.
Did? Okay, I had no idea. So Louisiana Monroe, which at the time wasn't even named Louisiana Monroe.
Shout out to Calvin Natt.
Shout out to Devin Downey.
Shout out to Devin Downey. So like, I don't know. I don't even know how we got on this conversation, but it's just been driving me crazy. Like people are, shut the F up and enjoy the greatness. Might be the wisest thing Jesus has ever said, and he's full of wise things. He's a genius, in case you didn't know.
He's very wise. If you want to talk some greatness, we can talk Brogdon, Virginia, because that's probably...
Oh, you know what? First, I want to go back to Maryland real quick.
Okay.
Sam, what's wrong with Maryland besides Melo Trimble? He's 14-16 in his past six games. That's 23% according to my calculator. There's something larger wrong. Is there something larger than that? Or is it simply, hey, Maryland was a mediocre basketball team until Melo Trimble enrolled? Then he enrolled last year. They were really good, and he was really good early, and they were really good, and now he's not playing very well, and so Maryland's not playing very well. Is it that, or is there more?
Before this, I just want to start out by saying that 7'2" James Donaldson from Heacham, England, made the All-Star game in 1988.
See what I'm saying?
I don't know who this is.
No,
like, no idea who that is. You're making up a human being right now.
Yeah, seriously. I am not joking. You could have told me this person is made up. And I believe it. This guy is not made up.
Well, that's
my point.
I'm
telling you that right now. Number two, Melo Trimble. I think he's just going through a slump.
Yeah.
It's it's fine. I think that he'll probably turn it around. He's too good of a player, too smart in pick and rolls. He's too good of a shooter. Once he gets that part of his game back, you would expect that he'll be fine. But Maryland does need him. I think that that's pretty clear, because if you look at the way that their splits kind of roll, they're okay defensively. Like, they're a top 20 team defensively because, I mean, they just kind of have a lot of athletes. I mean, even Diamond Stone, who's not a great athlete, is an okay rim protector in college. He blocked 4 shots over the weekend. Even Rashid Suleiman, Jake Lehman, Robert Carter, those are all guys who care defensively. You really saw what Jake Lehman could do in a press, for instance, against Purdue at the end of that game when they almost came back. But on offense, they really do run through Melo Trimble, because Carter can't really create a whole lot for himself. Lehman can't really create a whole lot for himself when he doesn't have an athletic mismatch, which he doesn't have at the 3. He would have it at the 4, but you have Carter at the 4 already. Rashid Suleiman can create for himself, but he just has only been okay at certain points this year. But the guy that they need in Diamond Stone is, I'm not a big fan of what he's done. I know he's been productive, but he doesn't really create anything for himself. He's just very good at making himself available for dump-offs. And making himself available in, you know, pick and roll situations with Trimble. So they really need Trimble is the point here. I think that's what's wrong with them. If they can get Melo Trimble back to being Melo Trimble, they're going to be okay. Like, they are probably going to be a Sweet 16, Elite 8 team. And I think that that'll be fine. But without him, they're in pretty big danger of, like, being upset early, I would say. I mean, this is a team that struggled against Georgetown early in the year. They struggled against Connecticut and the Kevin Ollie throwing papers on the ground game. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a team that really hasn't necessarily shown us throughout a course of a sample of like 5 games, like against elite competition, that they can, you know, put it together. And I think that if Melo Trimble doesn't bring it together by the end of the year, they're probably going to be in some trouble.
You know what? There was a team recently, and I can't for the life of me think of who it was. Maybe one of you will remember. But it was similar to Maryland in this sense, that they enrolled a highly regarded guy, whether it was a transfer or a freshman, who, like, was so good he had to play. But playing him meant you had to move people out of positions that they had been successful in. Like Lehman played the 4 last year. Now he's playing the 3. And he's probably like a 3 at the NBA level and all that stuff, but like, he was really good at the 4. But like, if you're gonna play Diamond Stone, you gotta move him, blah, 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 blah. There was a team a few years ago, maybe I can't remember.
I remember. I'm searching, I just can't figure it out.
Yeah, I can't I was been trying to think of it the whole time Sam was talking. But like, yeah, it was the same type of deal where you enroll this guy, you got to play him, but it's going to move somebody out of the position they flourished at the season before.
Well, you're seeing it at North Carolina right now.
Exactly right.
With Marcus Page. Right. I mean, Page is much better as a point guard than he is off the ball. He defends point guards better than he defends 2 guards. He is a lot better at creating offense than he is. It's just like spotting up on offense. And you're seeing it with North Carolina, and I know that Matt brought up Malcolm Brogdon, but, you know, Page is known as like a solid defender of point guards, but Brogdon took it to him just because he's bigger, he's stronger. I mean, he's, you know, Page isn't necessarily great at like fighting through off-ball screens and really getting around those guys and, you know, staying right on the other guy's hip. It's just it's a hard situation for the Tar Heels to be in. I think you're seeing a lot of that with Maryland, where, you know, Rashid Suleiman's a guy who likes to have the ball in his hands a little bit, and that takes away from what Melo Trimble does. Jake Lehman and Robert Carter really overlap a lot offensively with what they do. Diamond Stone, his presence in the lane, just taking up space on offense, probably doesn't necessarily help whenever you're posting him. So there are a lot of, you know, fit problems with the pieces that Maryland brought in. I figured that, you know, they're just so talented, they'll figure it out. But it's, you know, now going to March and they haven't yet. And that's
great. Was the team you were thinking maybe Louisville with Chris Jones? That was kind of,
I don't know. But like, this one is, once you get Robert Carter and Diamond Stone eligible, if you're going to play them together, Lehman's got to go to the 3, right? That's what happened here. And, you know, I think on a recent podcast, maybe Sam said, you know, the pieces just don't fit perfectly. And that might be the case. But it was one of those things like you sort of go, okay, like, what am I supposed to do? Not play Diamond Stone or Robert Carter? Like, what are we talking about? So, like, you just move Jake over and you try to make it work. And, you know, maybe it will work. They have won a lot of games. It's not like they're going to miss the NCAA tournament or something. But God, I'll think of it like, you know, it's like when I wake up at like 2:45 in the morning, it'll just pop into my head. But it was a team where same type of deal. They'd won a lot of games the year before. They were playing guys in very specific roles. Those guys returned, but then they enrolled somebody new and it was like, okay, to play this person, we've got to move this person here. And we've got to, you know, it might've been, I don't know, but it was like, it was very similar in the sense that you'd start going, hey, why is the team doing what it is we thought it would do on paper? And it was like, well, you know, when you start playing this guy, you got to move this guy over, and it's just not working the way it used to work. I can't remember who it was, but it seems, but it seems to be the case at Maryland just a little bit. I watched Duke and Pitt, and shout out to Pitt for finally getting a signature win. I know they'd beaten Notre Dame earlier, but they were 0-6 against the top 25 of the RPI when they woke up on Sunday morning. They got Duke really like led 10-0 and basically dominated them from start to finish. Duke never made a serious run, but Brandon Ingram did have a couple of moments, and it just sort of popped in my head. Are we sure he can't be the number one pick in the draft? because here's the deal. When I watch Ben Simmons, he's obviously great, but I see a ceiling on what he can be. You know, like I can with my imagination, I get to a point and I go, yeah, that's about as good as it'll probably get for Ben Simmons. I'm not telling you I'm right. I'm just saying I don't see a ceiling with Brandon Ingram. Like if you told me Brandon Ingram was going to be one of the top 10 players in the NBA, you know, in 5 years, I could go, okay, yeah, that seems like, does Brandon Ingram have a higher ceiling than Ben Simmons?
I don't think he does personally. I don't think he's as athletic as Simmons is. I think that's the thing that you kind of need to see with Ingram. Like he's a good athlete. He's really long. And I think that makes him look a little bit more athletic than he is because his arms just take up so much space and he kind of, you know, just naturally makes plays like that. In the NBA, it's going to be a little bit different than that. But again, he's 6'9", 6'10", 190 pounds. He's probably going to put on 25 more pounds of muscle, and you might be able to unlock a little bit more athleticism with that. Like, it's not out of the question that he could become a little bit more explosive with more muscle mass. It's tough for me. I have been saying all along, we had this conversation on the last podcast. It's definitely not a done deal. Ben Simmons is not your guarantee number one overall pick. Brandon Ingram is very much in the mix. There are scouts that like Brandon Ingram better. I think that Simmons still has a little bit higher of a ceiling because, you know, he's just so strong. He's so athletic. He's so fluid with the ball. He has such a high basketball IQ. If you can get him to shoot, like if you can get him up to like Draymond Green levels with the jump shot, and Draymond was, you know, still isn't an elite shooter by any means, but he was never really a good shooter until his senior year of college. If you can get him up to that level, I think that you're talking about a super Draymond Green, and there are conversations right now about whether or not Draymond Green is the best power forward in the NBA. So that's kind of where you're at with Simmons. And to me, that's a little bit more valuable than what I see Ingram being. But again, that's assuming that Simmons can get the shot and can start playing defense at a higher level. And that's, you know, to be seen.
I guess, yeah. Listen, if you...
There are arguments for both, right? I would say, is my point.
Let me be clear. If we held the draft tonight and I was in charge of the team picking first, I'd think I'd take Ben Simmons. But I think the casual basketball fan probably just assumes, because of the way everything's been promoted and discussed and written about, that it's like Ben Simmons and then the draft will get started. And I'm just... By the time we get to, I don't know, the combine, I won't be shocked if there's a real conversation about who should be the number one pick in the draft. Because this stuff often changes. I don't know if it often changes. I just remember there was once upon a time, it was very clear, or at least it seemed very clear, according to the mock drafts and stuff, that like Michael Beasley was going to be the number one pick in the draft. And then it was Derrick Rose. Now, some of that was because Chicago won the lottery and there's no way Chicago's passing on Derrick. But I think we got to the point where most people would have taken Derrick Rose over Michael Beasley. And sure. But I think probably on February 28th, 2008, if you looked at all the mock drafts, they probably had Beasley going one. And so I just...
February 28th last year, they probably had Jahlil Okafor
going number one. Right. Now, there are times when it's just not going to change. You know, the Anthony Davis draft, the LeBron draft. Sure. You know, there. But, like, I won't be surprised if this one... I don't know. If we look up and they're debating it on Pardon the Interruption or First Take or whatever, like, I won't be surprised if people will start, particularly if Duke gets on a run and Ingram's great on that big stage. I don't know. I just watching Ingram, I was like, are we sure? And we might be sure, but I think it's at least a conversation. Nordlander, do you have a preference?
If I had to pick, I'd pick Simmons at the pro level.
Yeah. Yeah. What does that mean? You like Ingram better at the college level?
No, I like them both. I got no issues with either.
well, that's nice of you. That's sweet. We'll pass that message along to both of them. Let them know that Matt Norlander has no issue with Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram. All right, before we get out of here, Tuesday night, we talked about it a little bit, but Indiana's got a chance to win an outright Big Ten title, but they got to win at Iowa or at home against Maryland. Do you think they'll go ahead and wrap it up at Iowa? Sam, you first.
I will say no.
Boo.
I think Iowa's going to come out with some urgency and really try and get it going and try and get it back on the right side of the ledger, because they've lost 4 of 5 now after the loss to Ohio State on Sunday.
Can't stop losing.
And, you know, Fran McCaffrey's teams do tend to kind of trail off a little bit at the end of the year. I don't know if that's, you know, a fair and unfair statement about what Fran's done there, but it's a fact of the matter to me. I think that they're going to get this one together. I think this team's a little bit better than the ones he's had in the past. And I think that you're going to see them beat Indiana, but I do think Indiana beats Maryland over the weekend.
I think that's probably right. I think Iowa gets some. I think the home teams win. So Indiana's got 2 games left, one at Iowa, the other one home at Maryland. I think the home teams win both games. And they'll be outright Big Ten champions. They just won't end with 2 wins.
I would agree with that. But why you got to leap over Leap Day? Because there's a few interesting things happening on Monday, you know.
What? Like what, Norlander?
Like the fact that Texas has a 19-10 team that's probably going to beat Kansas on Monday night and will be in a good position for, like, it's got a home game. Listen, Texas had a huge win over Oklahoma. We hadn't touched on that. They won definitively and made the Player of the Year race even more interesting.
That thing ain't over. Like, we might
listen, I told you this you 3 weeks ago. You told me to take a walk. I said, okay, I'll meet you back around after that walk. Well, guess what, GP? I'm back from my walk, and look at this.
You're right. Okay, you were right. I was wrong. I admit I was wrong.
Buddy had a good game. Don't get me wrong, but the team lost, and Michigan State keeps winning. And Denzel Valentine, this is mind-blowing to me, and it's per ESPN's research, but I guess over the past 3 decades, there's not been a college basketball player that has averaged better than 19 points, 7 rebounds, and 7 assists within a season. And Denzel Valentine is doing that. Mm-hmm. So that's
over
just
how long?
Over the past 3 decades, it hasn't happened. I'm going to bring it up right now.
That almost takes us back to the Calvin Natt era.
That was the Calvin Natt era. Right? That was at the tail end.
Are you sure Calvin Natt didn't do it? Should I look it up?
You know what? If records exist of the famed Natt era, you might have to give that a quick check there. I'm bringing it up right now because I got the stats today.
I can't believe I'm looking up Calvin Natt.
All right. Since the NCAA first recognized the assist as an official stat in 83-84, Valentine is the first player in the nation to average 19-7-7 in that time period. And so that's crazy to me because, I mean, it's an awesome and amazing line, but it's mind-boggling that no player has done that. You know,
not even
but Valentine's doing it right now, so he certainly is, you know, very much right there with Buddy. But I was mentioning Texas. It has a home game against Kansas, which is locked up at least a share of the Big 12 regular season title. I'm not saying it won't be motivated, but I do think Texas will win. North Carolina gets a bounce back game against Syracuse. It'll probably lose. Syracuse has got to get a couple more wins here if it wants to be in the tournament, in my opinion. Iowa State wants to get right at home on Monday night. So those are the Monday ones I just wanted to touch on. Is there anything on Tuesday that you would like to discuss, GP? Florida needing the win at home against Kentucky?
Yeah. Can they get that?
Well, it's at the O-Dome.
It is at the O-Dome. It's tough down there. Vandy won there, but not anybody can do that.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Vandy got – I'm not convinced Vandy's going to the tournament, by the way. It will get there if it doesn't – lose bad games, but everyone's like putting them in the tournament, and I'm not there.
Well, you got to put 68 teams in the tournament.
I know that.
You're aware of that, right? How about this? Vandy has, check this out. Vandy has, I'm just full of statistics. Vandy has four top 50 RPI wins and four, well, I heard that, four losses outside of the top 40, all right? Kentucky has four top 50 RPI wins and six losses outside of the top 50.
That's actually fairly ridiculous.
Like, Kentucky has six losses outside of the top 50.
Yeah, I know.
No other team, whatever it was I tweeted, no other team in the top 25 has more than four losses outside of the top 50. Kentucky's got six.
What's going to happen here,
Kentucky
GP?
Kentucky has five, I'm looking at.
Oh, yeah, it changed because somebody creeped into the top 50 while I went to bed last night.
Which, you
it's
know,
still five. Your, they still got more know, than they still got just, more than anybody else. That's my point.
It goes to that whole arbitrary, like the cutoff line is 50 and yada, yada. But,
sure,
what's going to happen here?
That's the cutoff line, Norlander. Don't try to move it.
Okay. So the SEC is going to have a situation where it's not going to have any teams with any good seeds. You know, it's going to be – so I think it's highly likely that the best case scenario for the SEC – if things break the right way, it'll have two teams reach the Sweet 16. But even that might be asking too much. And obviously the one team we would think that would break through would be Kentucky. But then again, it's very tough to win at the O Dome. And now Florida is in big time need of winning. If it doesn't win that, I would argue that Florida would need to win the SEC tournament to get a bid, in my opinion.
Best case scenario for the SEC is probably Texas A&M winning out, I would say. As far as getting a highly seeded team.
Highest possible seed, you're absolutely right, yes.
Yeah, because they have Auburn and Vanderbilt left. You'll get maybe one or two more quality wins there. In the SEC tournament, that is. They're already at 22 in the RPI, and they have five top 50 wins, five top 100 wins additionally, and only four losses outside of the top 50, which still isn't great, but... yeah, I'd say that's probably their best bet, right? Maybe they get a three if they want out.
I will say this.
Maybe.
Of all the smart-ass comments I get on Twitter, one guy, like, it was also a smart-ass comment, but at least it made me think. He goes, everybody keeps talking about how Kentucky's turned it around and Kentucky can beat anybody. Why do people think that? Why? And he said, because they've beaten some bad teams at home? Like, why do people think that Kentucky has turned it on and is somehow... like one of the elite teams in the country now. I understand the talent. Ulis and Murray are terrific, but like he was trying to be smart alecky. But like I think it's a reasonable question. Sam, I'll ask you why are we sure that Kentucky really is this different team, or is it just that you know they beat some you know crap team? Not you know it since the calendar.
I mean, they blew out South Carolina.
I mean,
South Carolina.
But like how good is South Carolina? I mean, all due respect, they turned it around. They're going to the tournament.
No,
Martin's awesome. But like, how good are they?
Yeah, no, I agree. Overall, I agree. I don't know that they've turned it around. I mean, the front court is still a mess in a lot of ways. Like, everyone looks at Derek Willis as this guy who's, like, turned around Kentucky's fortunes, and I'm just like, not really? I mean, you look at what they're getting in the front court. I mean, I know that they won those four games in a row where three of them were at home, but, you know, they're still not getting enough from those big guys. I mean, Marcus Lee has been okay. You know, Poitras has been injury plagued, I guess, over the course of the last month. He's back now, but they're still not getting anything out of Scal. Isaac Humphries is still a freshman that's, you know, 17, 18 years old. And it's just tough for me to trust a team that can't count on their front court as much as this one can. Now, the optics behind what Jamal Murray and Tyler Ulis are doing, both of whom very well might be All-Americans at this point.
Different levels. Yeah, I would agree.
Well, I would say this. I had to turn in a Naismith ballot the other day, Friday, I guess it was. Top 10. Mm-hmm. I had Ulis and Murray both on it. I think they're both great.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the right choice.
Yeah, I had them both on. But, like, how about this? Since January 1st, since the calendar turned to 2016, best team Kentucky's beaten? Probably South Carolina?
South Carolina on the road,
Or Florida or Vanderbilt? I mean, like, there ain't a whole lot.
I know. But again, we've talked about this. You know, they did it 2 years ago.
No, you're right.
And then it can happen. Before we close out here, just a real quick thing on Wisconsin, which got a home win over Michigan on Sunday night. I mean, it's got six top 50 wins, a top 10 strength of schedule per the ever shaky RPI, if that's what they're going to use. It came in to the day. Jerry Palm had him as a 9. Home win over Michigan might or might not bump them up to an 8, but they're going to be in the tournament. I'm pretty certain it's saying this. They're not a lock, because if they lost out, they wouldn't get in. But there's no reason to think that they aren't getting in. And it's simply ridiculous that this is – I mean, they were a 9-9 team, and they have completely turned it around. They're going to go to their 18th straight NCAA tournament, looks like. And Greg Gard's almost definitely going to get that job. So I just wanted to mention that, because they just finished up the game as we were recording the podcast.
Probably should have gotten rid of Bo Ryan 2 years ago, won back-to-back national titles.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. I mean, what were they waiting on? Yeah, seriously, exactly. What were they waiting on? Yeah. Like, the biggest the thing nobody's talking about in this whole thing. Like, if Barry Alvarez would have pulled the trigger on this 3 years
you
ago.
You just found your Tuesday column, Parrish.
Tuesday column will be on what if. How many national championships would Frank Kaminsky have won if Bill Ryan would have retired 3 years ago?
I'm so disappointed it's not an oral history of Adam Woodbury's eye poking.
Man, I was watching Woodbury every second of that game today. I was like, come on, buddy, give me one. Poke somebody's pupil. Get somebody in the pupil. He wouldn't do it. He didn't do it. I think he's, I don't know. I watched 40 minutes of Grayson Allen. No tripping. Boring. Watch 40 minutes of Woodbury, no eye poking, boring. Spent my whole Sunday just waiting for something neat to happen. My two guys didn't come through for me.
There's still plenty of weeks left, though. Don't give up hope.
Shout out to Calvin Natt.
Can I give you some Calvin Natt stats
while
we're at it?
Please, please.
Calvin Natt scored over 20 points a game and averaged 11 rebounds per game throughout the course of his entire career at Louisiana Monroe.
How about that? Sounds like
we do not have assist stats, because he went from 75 to 79, though.
Correct. And as we just discussed, the NCAA did not track assist stats until the 1983-84 season.
See? It's probably a disservice to the great Calvin Natt.
It was. I feel confident of that.
Hey, we're going to do another podcast on Wednesday. Do you guys want to do it or not?
On Wednesday?
Yeah.
You
don't want to? I know you told me once before you don't want to. I figured I would ask again publicly.
I'm saying no on the record for a Wednesday podcast. I mean, I'm there for you on Friday, without a doubt. But I don't know. I know you'd love to talk to me again, but you're trying to put me on the spot. I mean,
No. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. We have reached the point, full disclosure here, where it has been suggested that maybe we should be doing a Monday, Wednesday, Friday podcast now. And I don't feel like I'm in any position to say no. So I said yes. But I don't want to overcommit you guys, although I do enjoy talking to you.
I mean, you could reach out to Calvin Natt.
I'd love to get Calvin Natt on the
Calvin Natt alive? I hope he's alive.
I hope so. My dream podcast would be me, Calvin Natt, Devin Downey.
I know it would.
I would just shout him out the whole time.
Calvin Natt is alive.
Thank God.
And apparently is an ordained minister and owns a funeral home in Denver.
Dig
per that. Wikipedia.
How about that? Shout out to Calvin Natt's funeral home. If I die anytime soon, have me buried at Calvin Natt's. I want my service to be at Calvin Natt's funeral home. Can we do that? How weird would it be to have my service in Denver?
God.
simply to be in the presence of the great Calvin Natt. That's the only way. That's the only way I'll rest in peace. I think it's the only way I'll rest in peace.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we'll figure out the Wednesday thing.
What are we even talking about?
Do we want Oscars predictions while we're here?
Okay. We are recording this pre-Oscars. And we're recording it pre-Oscars so that we can watch the Oscars.
This is a fact.
Okay. I've seen 7 of the 8 Best Pictures.
I've seen 3.
The only one I didn't see is Brooklyn. And in my opinion, the winner should be Room.
I have not seen Room.
It should be Room or Spotlight. Either one. It should not be the Revenant.
Spotlight was incredible.
Spotlight was incredible.
The Big Short was pretty good.
I liked it.
I did like Spotlight more, and I saw Mad Max Fury Road, which was definitely intense and fun, but obviously has no chance. I would go Spotlight, Big Short, Mad Max. Of the ones that I saw, I have no idea what Room is about.
It's one of those movies where Sam, have you seen Room?
I have.
Okay, it's one of those, you can't really tell somebody what it's about because it kind of ruins.
Okay, yeah, don't.
What
I'll,
it's about.
I'll,
right.
yeah. I'll try and find out.
Yeah, you don't want to say what it's about, because if I tell you what it's about, it'll mess up the first 30
But that was surprising
minutes.
That you went Room.
I would. I think
Room's really good. It's really good.
It's really good. I think it should be Room or Spotlight. Either one. It should definitely not. I liked every one of them. Of the seven that I saw, there was not one that I thought was a dud. I liked The Martian. I liked The Revenant. I liked The Big Short. I liked Bridge of Spies. Like, I enjoyed all of them. But to me, Spotlight and Room were a level above the others. And The Revenant, I wouldn't even put in the top half. I know it's the favorite to win. I wouldn't even put it in the top four of the eight.
Yeah, The Revenant's tough because, like, by sheer, like, filmmaking craft, it's probably the best. But the story is just not good. Like the story is just not nearly 2.5 hours worth of story, and it's boring, and it's, you know, like, there's no flow. It's not a good story at all. And, I mean, if you're making a movie, you're making a best picture, I think the story is important. So I would not pick The Revenant. I would pick Spotlight as well. I've only seen five, though. I've not seen The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, or Brooklyn.
Big Short is
I liked cool. It.
They break the fourth wall, and I like the way they do that.
I love that. The way they do that. It's so good.
That was pretty cool. I'm liking Carell more and more, just as, like, an actor. I think Carell is my favorite. He's not like – he wasn't like how – like when you watched – what's the wrestling movie? I'm just blanking on the name.
Foxcatcher.
Like, when you watched it and you were kind of like, oh my gosh, this is Carell, like, going for an Oscar. This is his moment. He wasn't like that. But I really liked what he brought to that movie. And actually, I think it was my favorite Ryan Gosling movie ever. He's also in Big Short, and I liked what
he was great. I love the way they broke the fourth wall. It was, like, creative and funny. And
I'd never seen a movie do. I'm sure it's happened the way they did it, but yeah. I just can't remember a movie ever doing it. And it was kind of necessary to the plot, in my opinion.
No, it was perfect because it was like, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but right. It's a complex, you know, the subject matter is complex, right? And so they would say, all right, here's Selena Gomez to, like, was it Selena Gomez?
Yeah,
like,
it was.
Yeah. Here's Selena Gomez to explain to you what this means. And then it would just be Selena Gomez explaining to you what it means. Or it was like, here's, Margot Robbie? Yeah. Here's Mark. So it'd be just like beautiful women explaining to you what it was. Except they had a man do it one time, right? So,
yeah. And they had like, they did.
But they, like, break the movie basically to say, here's a beautiful woman or somebody else famous to just sort of explain to you what it is you're watching. And so it was like, it was an interesting device. And I thought it worked well. I laughed each time. I thought it was good. I liked all the movies. I just think, Room.
And I think Leo is, like, the biggest favorite, like, ever to win the.
Which is crazy. They didn't even talk for half the movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen. I'm in
Brie
no
Larson's
rush to see
also
that.
A massive favorite.
Who?
She was good.
Brie Larson, the woman in Room.
Hey, the little boy in Room, I thought was really good too.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, like, he's like the, like, 7 years
Jacob
old.
Jacob Tremblay.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Like, I was surprised after watching that film. I was surprised he wasn't nominated for supporting actor.
All right.
But my guy from Big Show, listen, Stallone's got to win supporting actor. But you know who else was really good? Christian Bale.
Mm-hmm. He was good. But what's surprising is he got nominated and Carell didn't. And yet Carell was in the movie more. I felt it was kind of like almost equal screen time. He was good, but, like, it was to me, it was like the sixth best Christian Bale movie. You know, it was
He's really good. So, like, whatever. But, like, I thought he was good in that role.
He learned how to play the drums for it because it's based on like the guy who's based on in that movie was like so intense that he actually listened to like death metal to calm himself down.
No. So anybody, so when The Revenant wins tonight, that'll be a mistake. And if you haven't seen Room yet, you should go see Room. Any of the Best Picture nominees of the ones I saw, seven of the eight, they're all every one of them was worth seeing. But Room and Spotlight are the two that I think you have to see. They're both two.
And Mad Max. You should definitely see
Mad Max. Yeah. I liked it.
It's different, but you should
definitely see it. It's not for everyone, though. Yeah. Like, Spotlight's like, you have to watch Spotlight.
I guess
Mad Max is definitely not for everyone.
Here's what I would say with Spotlight and Room. This is the one thing they have in common. Like, it messes with your emotions as you're watching the films. Both of them.
Yeah.
Like, both of them made, like, you know, like most movies, you just watch the movie and you laugh a little bit and you think a little bit, but it doesn't really affect your mood. Like, it's just a movie. Spotlight affected my mood, and Room affected my mood. There were times in both films where I was like, you know, like it just they affect your mood, and I think that's great filmmaking when you can find a film that'll do that. Am I overstating it, Sam?
No, I think that's right. They both really affected my mood. I would also say Mad Max just gives you a massive adrenaline rush upon watching it. And that's kind of an emotion. That's the goal of that movie.
For sure.
I'm trying to think what other Oscar hot takes I have. I don't know if I can abide by Stallone winning Best Supporting Actor.
Well, I just can't, in good conscience, pick against Rocco. I mean, that's my guy.
Did you say Rocco?
Yeah, Rocco. I feel like...
Don't you mean Rocky?
Well, yeah, but Paulie calls him Rocco.
Yeah.
Oh, does he? Okay.
Yeah. What do you mean, does he? Norlander?
Spoiler alert, I've seen Rocky 1 and 2, and it has been at least 15 years since I saw you.
Wait, you haven't seen Rocky 4?
Never seen Rocky
4. What?
Leave America.
Yeah, why are you even American? Who let you in this country?
Listen, it's just, you know, we all have those movies. Like, you just haven't seen. Everyone's got a couple of movies that are, like, classics.
Now, I thought about this. Like, yeah. When I went to see Rocky Balboa, like, I cried in the movie. Like, there's a scene where I was tearing up. I was all alone in the movie theater, and I'm tearing up. And I was like, why am I crying at Rocky Balboa?
That's right there. That's just an amazing vision. You're sitting alone in a movie theater crying?
Yeah, sitting alone in a movie theater crying about Rocky Balboa, I swear to God. And so I started going, like, okay, what happened to me right there? Like the rest of the day, I was like, all right, what happened? Why am I crying at Rocky Balboa? And you know what I came up with? I know more about Rocky. First off, you know when Rocky was made? 77, late 70s, like the year I was born, right? I've known Rocky my whole life. Think about that. And I bet you I know more about Rocky than I know about most of my friends. I know Rocky's wife. I know his kids. I know where he grew up. I know what his house looks like.
You know that he's
like
a fictional character?
But, like, that's my point. But I feel like Rocky's my guy. Like, I feel like I know Rocky Balboa. I I'm being dead serious. I know more about Rocky Balboa than I know about my neighbors. And like, I'm not even talking about, like, neighbors I don't talk to. I'm talking about, like, neighbors I go to their house. They come to my house. I know more about Rocky Balboa than I know about most people I'm related to.
I mean, I don't know what to do with this information. Like,
is that crazy? I feel like Rocky
Balboa. The second straight podcast where it's gotten completely ridiculous.
I feel like Rocky Balboa is, like, one of my friends. I feel like I should be friends with Rocky Balboa. I want to be friends with Rocky Balboa. That's what I want to do.
You're approaching 40 and still have imaginary friends.
Let me tell you where I am. Okay, so I'm approaching 40 and I basically got two goals for the rest of my life. I've had a good life. I have two goals. I want to be friends with Rocky Balboa. And when I die, I want to be buried. I want Calvin Natt to handle the service. That's it. Is that too much to ask out of this world?
No.
I don't think so.
Come back.
Let's go. I'll talk to you on Wednesday. Hey, remember, you can subscribe to the podcast if you want to. If you don't, I completely understand. But if you want to, it's there.